This episode is brought to you by Acorn TV.
Acorn TV. And Nick and I realized as we were watching all of the televisions, these are all shows where everybody drives on the other side of the road.
I mean, except for like the Canadian things like Murdoch Mysteries. Yeah, it's a lot of left-handed driving.
But Murdoch Mysteries, there's still horses.
A loophole. So
I love a loophole.
So speaking of driving left, from New Zealand comes the Brokenwood Mysteries.
Let me set the scene. Everybody knows I'm obsessed with New Zealand, obviously from my love of Lord of the Rings, which everyone knows is a true story that happened in New Zealand. And so this takes place in a fictional town in New Zealand, small town, less than 5,000 people, which is exactly the size of the town I grew up in. And it's like a big city detective comes to the small town and has to work with the small town police force. What a recipe for a fantastic crime drama. And we have the small towns, people are dying left, right, and center.
And use code ACORN30 at acorn.tv. Hey there, it's Nick.
And it's Leah.
So we're doing another live show.
Were You Raised by Wolves Live.
And this time we're going to be on the West Coast.
Portland, Oregon, babies.
So come see us on June 15th.
And we're going to be at the Siren Theater. And the show starts at 7:30.
So go to our website, whereyouraisedbywolves.com/live, and get some tickets.
Join us.
Hey everybody, it's Nick Layton.
And it's Leah Bonema.
And we had so many great questions from you all in the wilderness.
Ow!
That, we have a bonus episode, so here we go. Our first question is, quote, if a host provides a squeegee in their shower, am I obligated to use it as a guest? Is it rude to choose not to squeegee their shower as a guest?
I don't know, you know, when I read this, I thought, this is a Nick question.
Oh, it's a me question? Why, is it the squeegee part? Does squeegee just say Nick Layton to you?
Squeegee says Nick Layton to me.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, do you want to take a stab?
My stab was very vague.
Okay. Let's hear it.
I kind of feel like the squeegee's in the shower because that's how what they use to, I feel like, what's the damage that you did? Did you soak
water
the
spots.
Shower? But I mean, how long? You know what I mean? If this is a long shower where there's like condensation dripping.
I mean.
Or did you just get in and you had a little rinse?
Have you ever been in one of these showers though? I mean, let's paint the scene. It's typically like a glass wall partition thing. It's not a shower curtain. And any water on this thing is going to leave a drip, a water spot when it dries.
Well, that's why I feel like it's a Nick Layton question. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay. So I think, first of all, why do we have these things? I mean, I'm a big fan of not having things in your house that are hard to keep clean. Like, I'm not going to have black granite countertops in my kitchen. Like, what an insane thing. You cannot keep those clean. I don't want to spend my life Windexing. And I feel like this is one of these things. This is like a surface. This is like, you can never get this perfectly clean unless you want to spend your life Windexing and like squeegeeing. And like, that's not a life I want to live. So I think my advice here is we have to renovate. I think we just have to renovate everybody's houses and take these out. So that's it. Next question.
Yeah, it's so funny. That's not what I thought you were going to go with.
Well, okay.
But
so,
of course, it's very Nick.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like it's very impractical to have things in your house that are just hard to always keep pristine. And I like to live in a pristine world. So I would not have this in any of my homes. I do think the interesting thing is the word choose. Is it rude to choose not to squeegee? That is an active choice. And it's sort of like, why would you actively choose to like not do something courteous? That's how I read this. So it's like, how hard is it just to squeegee?
Yeah, but also I guess from the other side, it's like as the host, if I had a squeegee shower and you were using it and you didn't squeegee, I'd be like, whatever, I'll squeegee after you're gone.
So I think hosts are going to fall into two categories. One are going to be the ones that agree with you, which is like, it's fine. The others are like, they didn't squeegee.
I guess I sort of don't expect, and I feel like people are going to message me on this, and I guess I should just be comfortable with that. I'm not inviting people over to my house to do labor.
Right. Well, I think it's the dance. It's the guest host dance, which is like you should be mad at your guests if like it doesn't happen. Like that should just be the cost of entertaining. Also, they're never going to do it to the degree that you need it to be done.
Yes.
To be satisfying. You're going to go back. You're going to squeegee it over. So like that's what's happening. However, I do want my guests to make an effort. You know, like you're not going to do it right, but like I want to know that you tried a little bit. Like I like that gesture. Like to see the squeegee and actively choose not to use it. I'm like, yeah, would it kill you to, you know, give it a few little wipes with the squeegee? You know, just show you cared a little bit. I kind of want that too.
Also, I think in some bathrooms, there's like a problem with condensation.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like in for when we signed our lease in this apartment, like they made it very clear that water sitting on walls is a situation.
Sure.
So if it's that kind of a thing, and then somebody's visiting me and be like, hey, when you get out of the shower, can you pop a window and do a quick squeege? Because we got a little problems with condensation here.
Oh, yes. As a guest, I don't want to give you black mold.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I see that entirely. But if it's you don't want smudge marks, it's not a crisis.
Well, I think this is absent any conversation between host and guest. Because like as a guest, if I saw a squeegee, I would just squeegee. If I wasn't sure if you wanted me to squeegee for some reason, I guess I could ask like, hey, do you want me to squeegee afterwards? And then as a host, you'd be like, oh, don't worry about it. Or like, sure. And if it really bothered you as a host, you could ask your guest like, oh, here's your towels. Here's where the guest bathroom is. And like, oh, if you wouldn't mind giving it a quick squeege, to use a Lee Bonham expression, then that would be perfectly fine, I think.
Yeah, I think you could say, do you mind giving it a quick squeege if it's a thing? Otherwise, I need to be told. Otherwise, I just think it's something you have in there.
Your own volition, it would not occur to you to use the provided squeegee.
No, it would not.
Okay.
I'd be like, am I supposed to use this on myself?
Oh, what to do with the squeegee? Well, that's a different conversation.
I just need to be told what to, just tell me.
Well, okay, this podcast is telling you and everybody else out there that if you see a squeegee in a bathroom and there's a glass wall, you are being encouraged to use it to remove water from that so that when it does dry, it doesn't have water spots. Like that is the point of this.
That's how far we had to walk for you to answer that question directly.
You didn't like the journey we took? The side to side sweeping motion of a journey. Okay.
There, now I'm told.
Now you know.
If you see a squeegee, squeegee.
It'd just be nice to do. Because, I mean, it's not going to kill you. It's not going to kill you.
Oh, I'm happy to do it.
But I will say that if you are a host that has a squeegee lifestyle, you just have to know not every guest is going to be able to live up to your expectations.
Oh, they're for sure not.
So just want to calibrate accordingly. So our next question is, quote, I was recently at a lovely group dinner with friends and two of us had just made travel plans and we asked the rest of the table if anyone else might want to join. As people weighed the pros and cons, they asked how much our flights cost. When I shared the amount we paid, I was met with the following comments. Oh my gosh, why did you pay that much? Oh, I don't think I would have paid that price. What? But I flew to that city for cheaper. This made me feel like I had to defend myself. I proceeded to explain the limited flight options and how this was just the cost of economy flights since it will be at peak travel season. After being met with another round of comments on the price, I felt myself starting to have an emotional reaction. So I finally told them, "You guys are making me feel bad." The group immediately switched their tone to say that I should not regret it and that I would have a great time. But I've been in a few group conversations where similar comments have been made to me, as travel is one area where I do choose to spend my money. Is there anything I could say to politely head off the negative, judgy comments next time?
I'm very proud of our letter writer for saying, hey, you're making me feel bad. You know, just be like, just very direct, like this doesn't feel good to me.
Yeah, and it did end it. It was successful. So I think that is a great etiquette resolution to that current problem.
I did notice that instead of taking responsibility for the friends, instead of saying like, oh, I shouldn't have said that or why, they're like, oh, don't regret your choice. It's like, no, maybe you should have kept your opinion to yourself.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
And then I almost feel like let's not get in these conversations with these people anymore. When you say this has happened before, is there anything politely to head off any negative? It seems like people, and this does seem like a trend, where when you say something, people then feel the need to say what they think about it instead of just saying, oh, you know.
Oh, you mean the trend of people feeling the need to comment on everything?
Yes.
That trend? Yeah. I mean, welcome to Yelp reviews and all reviews and commentary. And yeah, no, there is this feeling that everything requires some sort of commentary.
But commentary on how it would work for you. When it's our letter writer's travel plans. You know, it's just like a very, like when I say I like Lord of the Rings, people go, I hate it. You're like, well, I'm just telling you what I like. You don't need to, you don't need to tell me I would never pay that. You're like, oh, how about just have a great time?
Yeah. I mean, I think the issue here is that it's actually not about what things cost. Like, that's not what this is about. It's that your friends are saying you have bad judgment. You have bad judgment because you allowed yourself to pay some dollar amount for something and allowing yourself to pay that was bad judgment. And that's why I think this is super rude. And also, like, why this made you feel bad. Because, like, your friends are being like, oh, you have bad judgment.
I don't like it. And I would try to not be in these conversations anymore.
Yeah, I think that's really the solution. Like, let's just not go there again. Because we all spend our money the way we want to. And we all have different things we spend our money on. Like, I spend money on travel. Like, that's where most of my budget goes. Other people spend their money in different ways. On watches, on experiences, on fine wines, on cooking at home, on cheese. Leah, what do you spend your money on?
My dog.
Your dog. Yeah, actually, that is really true. Right. And so, like, that's how you want to spend your money, in which case, that's great. That's not for anybody else to question.
Yeah, it's just, I really think this is a sad habit that's come into our culture where everybody just comments on, it's very judgy. Oh, how I think you, like you just said. And I think the best way to deal with it is by not participating in these conversations.
That's tricky though, because it's like, oh, it would be nice if these friends wanted to join us for our trip to Reykjavik or wherever we're going. And it's like, if we don't talk about it at all, then it's sort of like, you know, I guess we could say like, oh, here are our dates. And we're flying on Iceland Air, but, you know, other airlines fly there too. And so, you know, check out the flights to see if anything works for you. And maybe that's just how we leave it.
And then if somebody says, well, how much did you pay? I almost feel like you could say, hey, last time we had this conversation, I brought up what I paid and all of you sort of jumped on me and made me feel bad about it. So I don't really want to talk about it anymore.
That's fair. That's definitely fair. Yeah.
Because you're not being rude. You're just being like, hey, this is a road I've walked down before more than once. And every time I feel bad, so I'm not walking down it. Because people need to, like, have a little mirror back onto their, you know, oh, I did do that.
Yes. And it's also like, do you really want to talk about the way you spend your money? Like, let's talk about how you prioritize your finances. And it's like, that's not what we're doing.
It's your money.
Yes. Unless it's your business, how somebody spends their money. Unless there actually is some reason why you need to be involved or care or have a say. If that is not what is happening, then yeah, it is not your business.
And you're welcome to say if someone was like, hey, I would love for you to come. And then you're like, oh, I can't afford it right now. That's fine. But don't say, oh, you shouldn't have paid that.
Right. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry this happened. But I hope you have a great trip.
I hope you have an amazing trip.
Yeah. Actually, I hope it's so good that you make all these other people regret not joining you. That's really the most satisfying outcome here.
I also think it's a very satisfying outcome telling people, I don't want to go down that road again.
Yeah. I mean, it is satisfying to set a boundary and be like, yep, I just set that boundary.
I set that boundary because you multiple times hurt my feelings, so I'm not doing that to myself. Love you.
And now it's time for Intermezzo.
Intermezzo.
So this episode is brought to you by Acorn TV, which has the best of British, Canadian, New Zealand, like all sorts of great television.
And they have tons of different kinds of shows.
Oh yeah, all sorts of genres.
I'm just severely focused on crime, mystery, murder. That's really my sweet spot.
And so obviously the Brokenwood Mysteries from New Zealand, this is up your alley.
Very up my alley because it combines my love of murder mysteries and my love of New Zealand, which was born from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, no, anything set in a seemingly quiet country town where something goes wrong. Yeah, I mean, this is up your alley.
Also, they have a big city detective move to said small town, having to work with the local police, and they have a different way of doing things that everybody finds to be a bit right. Jarring. So up my alley.
So check that out and use promo code ACORN30 at acorn.tv. And now it's time for Intermezzo.
Intermezzo.
So this episode is brought to you by Book of the Month.
I am loving getting to pick my Books of the Months. Is that the appropriate way to pluralize it? I'm loving getting my Books of the Month, but for multiple months now. So Books of the Months.
Yeah. Oh, it's so easy to order. It's super convenient. Their selection is wonderful. And this month, I picked The Ministry of Time, which sounds wild. It is about a civil servant who's helping to manage some government program where time travelers from other eras like come to help with something. And then they apparently fall in love. What? So like this guy from the 1800s is like, what's Spotify? And then like, you know, love happens. So I cannot wait to receive this.
You know, love happens.
And you out there, you're going to love Book of the Month. So you can get your first book for just $5 with code PETALS. So go to bookofthemonth.com and use code PETALS to get your first book for just $5. So our next question is, quote, a friend of mine recently mentioned the one-year rule regarding time to get thank you notes out for wedding presents. I thought the one-year rule on wedding gifts applied to the time allowed to get gifts to the couple, not 1 year to write a thank you note. Can you give us a ruling, please?
It's another Nick Layton.
Yes. And we've talked about this before, but it does feel like we all need a little reminder. So here's the rule. You have up to a year to send a gift. You do not have a year to write a thank you note. Full stop. That's the rule.
You have 2 years.
Leah Bonema, you are not helping. We are trying to make the world better. You are just undoing it. You're just like pulling the little thread. You're unraveling the tapestry of politeness that we are trying to create here.
Oh, you know I'm kidding.
Yes, I know. But does everyone else know? And a little more context. The you have a year to send a gift thing, that is not an excuse to delay. That's more like a grace period. So you should send that gift promptly. Like, don't like actually wait until 364 days to like put that in the mail. But like, you do have some time after the event to send a gift. Regarding the timing on the when to send the thank you notes, it's as soon as you receive that gift, which might be before the wedding. Like, a lot of people send wedding gifts before the wedding actually happens. Those thank you notes should happen then. Do not wait until after the wedding to write a billion thank you notes. It is so much easier to do it as you go along. And definitely, the idea that you have, like, a year, like, what an insane thing. Because can you imagine if you send a gift and a year later you get a thank you note? Like, how does that strike you as a gift giver? That doesn't strike me good. So it is measured in days, weeks maybe. It is not measured in months. It's definitely not measured in a year. So just to be clear, you have up to a year to send. You do not have a year to write. Are we clear?
We are very clear. It's as if you used a squeegee and just cleared that glass.
Yeah. I feel like my tone might have been a little stern, but sometimes we have to have mean Nick. So our next question is, quote, I've always had a question about group chat etiquette, in particular, group chats about planning events. I got an invite to a party with a bit of a mystery. We only had the date and not the time or place. The host told us to text back our RSVPs on the big group chat with about 20 people. There was a storm of yeses and nos, and I had no idea what was going on and who was going. My question is, once people have responded, should you make a separate group chat with all of the people who said yes to answer questions about the party or give more information and to avoid hurting the feelings of someone who couldn't come? Or should you stay on the original group chat as to avoid cluttered texts and confusion?
I'm actually on a group text like this.
Okay, so big group text, an event is happening, a subset of those people may attend.
Yes, and I was very glad when the subset moved to another text strand because half the people weren't even in this geographical location. And I was like, why are they getting these texts?
Yeah. And are you going or not going?
I am going.
So you got moved to the new group?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like that is the way to go. And I think once you have sorted out all the logistics, then I think what is courteous is to go back to the original group text and pop in the details, which is like, hey, original group text people, just in case you have a change of plans or want to attend, here's now the final plan. FYI, let me know if you can make it in a private DM.
And I think it's less about our letter writer says to avoid hurting the people's feelings of someone who couldn't come. I don't think it necessarily hurts people's feelings. I think it's more that they don't need all those texts coming in about the details when it's something that they're no longer involved in.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. No, I think it's definitely courteous to be like, oh, take me out of the loop.
Yes.
But I would like, if I wasn't attending, like, oh, just give me a heads up when you do sort out the plan in case I wanted to go in the end or I had a change of plans or like just to know what it is. And I definitely wouldn't feel excluded then.
Yeah, I think that's a nice addition.
Okay. So then that's that. Do that. So our next question is, quote, I was invited to my boyfriend's family's home over the weekend. Dinner and breakfast the following morning were a sit-down. I honestly felt drained and awkward to go to breakfast, so I skipped it to catch up on some work. I'm afraid I was rude, but how much? What should I do about it now? And is this a bad sign for the relationship?
I always want to have our letter writers back.
Right. However.
However.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I understand you're tired. Traveling is hard. You had work. You felt like it was like early in the morning. You felt awkward. But I think that when we're meeting people's family we show up to the events we're invited to.
Yes, I think it's important to participate in all the things that your host has arranged, especially since it sounds like this is a new relationship. If you were married for 40 years and these were your in-laws and you've just had it, sure, stay upstairs, skip breakfast. Like, we all get it. But this sounds pretty new, so you do have to, like, put your best foot forward at all times.
And I understand when you have work, but I think you go down to breakfast. This is lovely. And then you say, man, I need to be excused. I have work. This was absolutely lovely. I'll see you at dinner.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, let's answer the questions. Was this rude? It wasn't great. Wasn't great. How much? Hard to say. I think we'd actually have to check in with the boyfriend on this. Be like, did anybody notice? Did anybody care? Because there's a lot of families where it's casual, although sit-down breakfast. Well, I guess most breakfasts are sit-down. I was thinking linen in my head when I heard sit-down.
There could have been linen.
There could have been linen. Yeah. When I read this, in my mind, I was picturing those silver toast thingies where the toast goes vertical.
Oh.
I was picturing that.
This is a lovely breakfast.
Well, because when you say like sit-down breakfast, it sounds so formal, but most times we are sitting. Unless we're just like eating a bagel while we're like standing over the sink.
So, I think they mean sit down like they're saying 8 a.m.
Yeah, breakfast will be served. Right. It's that vibe. Yeah. I guess I would ask the boyfriend, which was like, oh, how catastrophic was this?
And then is this a bad sign for the relationship?
So we are in an etiquette show, not a relationship show. We want to stay in our lane.
I love however. Not staying in my lane. So, oh, good. There was a however. I do think is the question, is it possible that this is something that really upset your partner's family or your boyfriend?
Right.
Is that the question?
Yeah.
And I mean, it could have. That's why I would talk to them about it.
Yeah. And a bad sign for the relationship. I mean, I guess it's sort of like, was there something happening where it was draining and awkward? That's a good question, I guess.
But I mean, sometimes we go up, we show to breakfast, we have small talk, we're polite, you know, because it's the person's family and that's just a part of the deal.
Yeah. You just got to rally. Yeah, so I think I would talk to the boyfriend. Did anybody notice? Is anybody bothered? And then I guess that's the conversation. Is there like, oh, how did we feel about all of that? And what, if anything, needs to happen now? Let's say the family is super bothered by this. Like, I cannot believe that she did not come down for breakfast. And they're annoyed. I think we would write a letter to our hosts of that weekend, thanking them for their hospitality, how nice it was to see them. Or meet them, explain that just, unfortunately, I just wasn't feeling up to breakfast that morning. A lot of work stress was happening. I want to apologize for coming across as rude. It was not my intention. I really enjoyed spending time with you. And I'm sorry that that meant I couldn't spend as much time with you as I wanted. So I just wanted to apologize. And I think we just kind of leave it at that. That's kind of the best you can do. And then like leave it in their court and then, you know, see if you get invited back.
I think if the boyfriend is upset about it, and he says his family's upset, and this is something that you want to fix. With that apology note, I might add a cheese basket.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I like a baked good. I mean, would you send breakfast items, or is that a little provocative?
That seems provocative. I would say muffins. What you said were, I apologize. I was just overtired from the trip. I wasn't feeling myself. I was upset about work. I should have taken the time. I apologize. I had a wonderful time meeting you.
Yeah.
I look forward to making it up in the future. And then, yeah. And then a baked good, a cheese.
Okay.
Not breakfast related.
Non-breakfast related. Caviar.
Like we're moving forward. The next right. thing.
And ideally the thing you send is actually something thoughtful that you noticed from that weekend together. So they mentioned something at dinner the night before. It's a hobby that you know they like. It's something that's super personal, not just like a vague basket of pears.
And then also, it is possible, as Nick said, that they weren't bothered at all. It was casual.
Yeah, I hope that's what it is.
It could totally be that.
Right.
And then regardless, I would send a thank you note for having me, whether or not you're going to apologize in it or not.
Oh, that's, yes. Actually, that will get you great points regardless. Yeah. No, actually, the thank you note, you should always send the thank you note. Yeah. And you do have their address because you were at their house.
So I feel like we handled that. We're supportive of our letter writer, even if we slightly were like, yes, maybe that was a bit of a thing, but we're moving forward and we love you dearly and we think we can get through this together.
I think we're going to be able to pull through. I do. Yeah. But keep us posted. Actually, let us know like, oh, was there actually any fallout and how did they like the cheese basket that you sent or how was the thank you note received? Do you get points for that? Yeah. Let us know how it goes.
I feel good about the plans we have to move forward with it.
Okay. We're moving forward. So our next thing is a bonkers.
Bonkers!
And it's quote, "While driving downtown, I noticed the car in front of me had a bumper sticker with a QR code that said, 'Help us fund our dream wedding.' I took a blurry picture through my windshield while waiting at the four-way stop because I doubted anyone would believe me without evidence. Who on earth would donate money for a random couple they've never met? I am gobsmacked."
I've actually seen this on the back of cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I'm not gobsmacked at all.
This is the world we live in.
Yeah. I mean, the idea that we're just begging strangers for money, that's the world we live in now.
And it's so, it's not like it's like a GoFundMe for a medical situation, which I absolutely understand. It's like, hey, help pay for my wedding.
It's tacky. Yeah. There's no polite way to do it. There's no polite way just to ask people for cold hard cash. It's just not a thing. Ms. Manners has a great quote on this very topic, which is, "People have gotten shameless about demanding money from family, friends, and strangers alike. Even the ubiquitous gift registry, with its transparent whitewash, is giving way to the outright demand for money. Any occasion will do, birth, death, anything in between, as an excuse for begging. It seems to Ms. Manners that there are enough serious causes that need addressing before solvent people are justified in engaging in self-philanthropy."
Self-philanthropy.
That's a very kind way to describe what is happening.
I have driven behind cars where I drove behind a car where their entire back window was spray painted with a help me. It was a wedding.
Yeah.
Help me have my dream wedding. And I wondered, has somebody driven by and been like, that's so funny, I'll throw $5 in.
This must work. This actually must work. I mean,
it must have worked at some point.
Because, yeah, okay, I'm going to throw in $5. I mean, is that going to help you have a dream wedding? I mean, what is your dream if my $5 is really going to push you over the edge?
Well, if 100 people throw in $5.
Yeah, okay.
I also, when I see these things, I sort of find them funny.
I think it's cheeky. I think it's pretty cheeky. Yeah.
You know, I think we're in this culture of it can't hurt to ask.
Right. And here's the thing. It can. It actually can. Yeah. Yeah, and it falls with the same sort of vibe of like, well, I'm just being honest. And it's kind of like, hmm.
Also, and sometimes you're not being honest. You're just being rude.
Yes. And so the idea, oh, it can't hurt to ask. Well, yeah. I mean, if it's unreasonable, it actually might hurt.
It's like walking up to somebody and saying, can you buy me a pony? Who are you? I've never met you.
Although I want to meet that person.
But also no. Like, maybe I'll just be like, so like, that's wild that you said, sure.
Yeah. Like, okay, let's go pony shopping.
All right, let's go get that pony.
Yeah, where does one buy a pony? I'd have to look that up. I don't know. Where can you buy them in stores?
I mean, we have been looking at pony pictures since that.
Yes, we've gotten a lot of pony content sent our way.
And obviously we would go to a pony rescue. We would go to a pony rescue. But yes, this was a bonkers story.
This is bonkers. But I love the term gobsmacked. I mean, what a great expression.
Fantastic.
I think we should all try to use it more this week.
I'm going
to
use it today.
Okay. I mean, I'm sorry about whatever is going to make you gobsmacked, but I'm excited that you get to use the expression.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of choices. That's what's bonkers about this story, is that it's not even bonkers anymore. And that's bonkers.
Yeah, I'm gobsmacked that this is not gobsmacking.
I'm gobsmacked that I've seen this in my own life. So there's more than one person doing it.
So you out there, have you been gobsmacked by anything lately? Or do you have an etiquette crime report for us, a vent, a repent, or a question? Please send it to us. Please send it to us through our website, raisedbywolves.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or send us a text message, 267-CALL-RBW. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. This episode is brought to you by Acorn TV.
Acorn TV. And Nick and I realized as we were watching all of the televisions, these are all shows where everybody drives on the other side of the road.
I mean, except for like the Canadian things like Murdoch Mysteries. Yeah, it's a lot of left-handed driving.
But Murdoch Mysteries, there's still horses.
A loophole. So
I love a loophole.
So speaking of driving left, from New Zealand comes the Brokenwood Mysteries.
Let me set the scene. Everybody knows I'm obsessed with New Zealand, obviously from my love of Lord of the Rings, which everyone knows is a true true story that happened in New Zealand. And so this takes place in a fictional town in New Zealand, small town, less than 5,000 people, which is exactly the size of the town I grew up in. And it's like a big city detective comes to the small town and has to work with the small town police force. What a recipe for a fantastic crime drama. And we have the small towns, people are dying left, right, and center.
And use code ACORN30 at acorn.tv. This episode is brought to you by Acorn TV.
Acorn TV. And Nick and I realized as we were watching all of the televisions, these are all shows where everybody drives on the other side of the road.
I mean, except for like the Canadian things like Murdoch Mysteries. Yeah, it's a lot of left-handed driving.
But Murdoch Mysteries, there's still horses.
A loophole. So
I love a loophole.
So speaking of driving left, from New Zealand comes the Brokenwood Mysteries.
Let me set the scene. Everybody knows I'm obsessed with New Zealand, obviously from my love of Lord of the Rings, which everyone knows is a true story that happened in New Zealand. And so this takes place in a fictional town in New Zealand, small town, less than 5,000 people, which is exactly the size of the town I grew up in. And it's like a big city detective comes to the small town and has to work with the small town police force. What a recipe for a fantastic crime drama. And we have the small towns, people are dying left, right, and center.
And use code ACORN30 at acorn.tv.